Welcome back to another episode of the Miami Video Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. On this episode, we're talking with Dave Mays. Now, we've had Dave on the show before. On this one, though, we're discussing how he recently reacquired his old channel, Kinotika. He was able to get it back, and now he is 100% owner of the channel, what he plans to do with it. And also, we're analyzing what it takes to have a successful YouTube channel. We're discussing the different steps and tactics that one can possibly take, the algorithm, how successful channels have gone down in viewership, and how unknown channels have basically gone up. It's very interesting. We have a very interesting and thoughtful conversation regarding this. If you're interested in opening, you're starting your channel, your podcast, whatever it is, we're starting to analyze what's going on with the algorithm, with the audience, with retention rate, and all this stuff that we really don't know much about. So we're trying to see how much does the viewership, how much of your content really plays a factor on this, or is it purely the YouTube algorithm, or is it a combination of all of it? So it's a very interesting conversation that we have. We bring up topics that and ideas that we really didn't think about before, and it kind of forced us to sort of rethink both of our strategies on the show. Dave is a good friend of mine, and I'm super glad I had him on the show. And we had such a great conversation. Just looking forward to what he does with his channel. But anyways, I'm done ranting. With all that said, here's my conversation with Dave Mays. All right, Dave Mays, you're back with us. Last time you were here, this was the iFilmmaker podcast. Now it's the Miami Video podcast.
I like that.
How you doing, man?
Dude, that's legit. I kind of wore my Miami shirt too. I don't know if you noticed.
I love that. I see the palm trees all over it. Looks really, yeah. Really cool.
I just picked this
up. Can't wait to get you out here, though.
Just picked this up off of Ross. Have you ever gone to Ross to get clothes?
Born and raised on Ross.
On. I don't know about you, but like my mom and my grandma, basically, Ross is like their like crack cocaine. Like they go there all the time. They're obsessed with Ross and Kohl's for the sales. You can't go to Kohl's like normal price because it's like overpriced, but they always have sales and stuff. So
it's so funny. Ross, like you go there expecting, it's like a treasure hunt. You got to go find the hidden gems in there.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see it. You go there, you're there for hours though. And then you find the good stuff.
Yeah, it's like there's all these like neon colored, you know, shirts and like purple shirts with the most disgusting like design you could ever imagine. But then right next to it is this shirt. I'm like, actually, that looks kind of good. And you kind of think to yourself too, like, am I deceiving myself here? Like, is this just like mediocre because it's next to so many bad shirts? But then you try it on, it's like, oh, it actually fits well. And I feel like they get you too with like TJ Maxx, Ross, those places, because it's like, compare at $70. I'm like, nobody's buying this shirt for $70. Like, I think it's all a scheme. Like, this was designed to be sold at Ross for, I think I paid $10 for this shirt.
Yeah.
It was designed to be sold for $10, but the tag is supposed to say, and it's always all these weird brands that you've never heard of too. It's like, compare at $79, we're selling it for $10. I'm like, I think that's all a scam. I don't
know. Have you ever seen those kiosks at the mall where all you see from a distance is sunglasses? There's Ray-Ban, Oakley. You see these big brand sunglasses. And then as you get closer, there's small letters on top of the big letters that say, compare prices to Ray-Ban, compare prices to Oakley. Nice. So it's kind of like a draw that gets you where that's you awful. Just see the big brands and that's what draws you. But you get closer and it's obviously like just something. Now they got you. Now you got to talk to this person that's probably going to approach you.
Totally.
That's so annoying.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, man. So you've had some big changes in your life. That's amazing. I saw you recently reacquired Kinotika.
Yeah.
The YouTube channel that you were once the main host for. You moved on to do Indie Mogul, and then you came back and you said, I want my channel back. Well, how did that whole thing kind of materialize?
Yeah, sure. So this last year, I kind of took the year off. And I think we discussed this previously the last time we talked, but I took the year off after Indie Mogul and worked for my cousins and did some just commercial work. Still doing video, lots and lots of video, actually. But it was a really healthy time for me. And I just want to encourage anybody who's listening who maybe is in that creator space, if they feel like it's taking a toll on their life and their family, then consider taking a break and not worrying about the algorithm and all this and that. Cause like I took a whole year off and I came back like stronger, better. Like my marriage is better. I feel healthier. My relationship with my kids is better. Like overall that last year, even though I kind of was kicking and screaming the whole time, not the whole time, but especially the first half. And I remember having a phone call with you about this. Like 2 months in, I was really kind of depressed and you really brought something up. You're like, you got to realize that your identity is not in what you do. Your identity is in Christ and it's in who you are as a person and who you are to God and stuff. So like,
that's right.
I really resonated with that. And it was you who kind of pointed that out to me, honestly, Ariel, and I appreciate your honesty in that way. Absolutely. So, that being said, that whole, you know, 2021 for me was a very good year, but to go back to what you just said, I was hosting Indie Mogul, a channel with over a million subs in the filmmaking community, and it was kind of the dream job for a lot of people, I would guess, and even for myself, obviously, too, like to be able to do YouTube full-time at that scale with a crew, with a set in Hollywood. It was kind of like a dream come true, and I found that it wasn't what I was expecting. It didn't fulfill me, you know, and that's where, you know, I feel like I needed that last year to really kind of reevaluate my life and to go back to God and realize that I get my identity in Him. So, anyways, I quit my job working for my cousins back in February. I'm still working with them on a contract basis, but, the last year I was a full-time like employee. So I was doing 8 hours a day, you know, 9 to 5 kind of thing. And, so we transitioned to contract based and they got pregnant. And so they were like, hey, we know we were going to like do a bunch of videos with you, but we're pregnant now. And Amy is like feeling really sick. So we can't really shoot anything for a while. And I'm like, great. I just went freelance. I lost my health insurance. Like I lost all my reliable income. Right. I need to figure out how to make money to pay the bills. So, right. It was completely on me, you know, it was my decision to go contract. So, you know, I didn't feel entitled to anything by them by any means, but I was expecting to at least have at least, you know, half of my income coming from them potentially. Sure. But, so it was just one of those moments where I was just trusting God that He would provide work. And, I started doing YouTube again on my own personal channel. And, you know, I had like 6,000 subs there because it was just sitting there for the last 4 years. And I posted my music video parodies on there over the years. And I just started doing some Kinotika videos again, style videos, which if you're not familiar, Kinotika was the channel I started about 4 years ago. A company hired me to host it. It was not my channel. I did not own it, but they paid me to host it. And Connor McCaskill also helped me shoot and edit that. And he moved back to Tennessee and he started working with me again back in February. And we were just doing the videos and everything was going great. And I was just talking to my buddy Zach, who used to host Kinotika. He was the guy who took over for me when I went to Indie Mogul. And he decided to quit back in December. And he's now working for Matt Diavella, doing all his video editing. Not all, but he's one of the editors that's working for Matt Diavella. And so I talked to Zach. I was like, do I have your blessing to like pursue reaching out to Kinotika? Cause Zach told me that they had no plans of like hiring another host. They had no plans on like what they wanted to do with the channel. The owners of the channel just kind of were like, yeah, we're kind of done with it. Like it's not, you know, it's not making a ton of money. It's just kind of sitting there. We don't want to kind of hassle with finding a new host and stuff.
Wow.
And so I asked Zach, I was like, I know you don't work there anymore, but I just kind of want your blessing on this because he's a good friend of mine.
Sure.
And he was like, dude, go for it. Like you and Connor kind of created that channel and like there's really nobody else that could take ownership because, you know, I have 200 of my past videos on there. It's like a library of all my old videos. And Connor too, who's working with me. So I started exploring that. I reached out to my old boss who doesn't work there anymore, but they're based in China. And so we had to do, you know, like a We had to do like a FaceTime call. And yeah, it's a, it was a, so yeah, did I just drop a bomb on you? Did you not know that?
Well, it was almost, the name would almost suggest it, but I really didn't, never really knew what Kinotika meant. So
it doesn't mean it doesn't really mean anything at all.
It sounds like a Chinese brand.
Yeah, it was basically a company that had started multiple channels in the camera gear industry and in the camera space. And it was like this investor who is from, apparently, this is all what I was told. So it's an investor from San Francisco who I looked up his name and he is a real person, but he lives in China and was investing in like camera gear news and like investing in DJI and different things. So I don't know the full story to be completely honest, but, it was always a question mark where the money was coming from and who this company was. So let's just, everything has been kind of like a little shady over those years, but because I was like, I would like to take ownership of this and make it not shady. And like, I own it, like, and make it fully American and fully normal. So, I reached out to my old boss and he was, at first he was like, do you still have the login credentials for Kinotika? And I was like, yeah, I do. I can actually still get into the YouTube studio. I still have my old email and everything. And I checked and, you know, like my Apple password manager still had all the login information. And, and he was like, you could just take it. I was like, I don't want to just like
take it.
I was like, I don't want to just like take over and not have permission. Like he was suggesting because I had YouTube studio that I could just change the name and just start uploading. He's like, they won't even notice. They don't care. And I was like, wow. I was like, well, I feel a little uncomfortable doing that because basically I was a manager of the channel, but not primary owner of the channel.
Oh.
The owner is the investor person. So, sure. So I was like, can you please just like, I'm not a primary owner and they could essentially delete it at any moment if I did that. Plus I'd feel morally wrong about that. So,
of course.
So anyways, so about a week goes by and he's like, okay, let me just like work some negotiating. And so he ended up just, reaching out to the owner and, he like went up the food chain to all the people that he knew back when he used to work for them. And, he came back and he said, you have full permission to take the channel for free. And we're going to transfer primary ownership over to you. You're the only person on the planet that we would do this to, basically. Cause like I kind of started it and they're like, we understand that this will really help you and benefit you. And so we would just want you to have it cause we don't want to do anything with it anymore. So, so I didn't have to pay anything for it. They just gave it to me.
Wow.
And they added me as an owner. And then when you're an owner of the channel, it takes 7 days. If you're like new on the, I don't know all the Google stuff, but like on the Google management side,
yeah,
you have to be an owner or something for a week before you can become a primary owner. And so I waited a week, I became the primary owner, and then I booted off everybody else. I was able to delete their accounts. And so now I, you know, my Gmail, my own login is attached to Kinotika. And then I posted my first video this Monday. As you're listening to this, it's March 25th, but it was this week. Yeah. I changed the name of the channel to Dave Mays. So, now like we can talk about that if you want, but yeah. I just felt like the name didn't really mean anything and people, it was just confusing. And that if I'm going to own it anyways, like I didn't want to have to build up two different brands, the Dave Mays brand and the Kinotika brand. And, yes, there's like a bunch of videos where I say this is Canotica, you know, but people can just figure it out that it used to be a different name and now it's Dave Mays. But
it's crazy how that whole thing unfolded.
Yeah, so I kind of shut down my personal channel and just kind of am just going full into this channel, which is the Canotica channel, which has 87,000 subs, I think. So hopefully we can get that up to is it 89? I don't know. But we're close to 100, so I'm hoping to hit 100 this year. That's kind of my goal. So,
oh, I'm sure you're going to get that.
For sure. We'll see.
But, man, that's pretty incredible how that whole thing happened. And, yeah, I could see what they mean by you're the only person, since it is essentially all your videos that is up on the channel. Did they do that with all the other channels that they owned?
I don't know all the channels.
You're aware of?
Oh, okay. So there's only one other channel that I know of, and it's called We Talk UAV. A guy named Alex is the host, and we've been in communication this last month because he's been a little frustrated with them not paying him on time and stuff.
Really?
And so I was telling him, like, you should just do what I did, like try to get ownership of it. But it might be a little different. I tried to get ownership of Canotica before Indie Mogul. I tried to get it and it was going to happen. And then at the last minute they backed out and they're like, no, never mind. We'll just keep paying you. And we don't want to give it to you. And I was going to pay for it. Like I was going to like give them the revenue for a year or something until I paid off like the value of it. But,
wow.
But yeah, technically, they gave me the brand of Canotica cause it's actually against YouTube's policy to sell a channel. So, but what you can do is transfer ownership of a company to different people, and that can include the YouTube channel. So, you know, if any lawyers are listening, the Canotica brand was given to me. So I own the domain Canotica.com. I own the brand. And then I included with that was the YouTube channel, which I then decided to change to the name Dave Mays. So
what was on the website?
They initially wanted to do like a Cinema D or Cine D kind of news shooter kind of thing.
Vlogs and stuff.
Yeah. And so when I first started the channel, part of my contract was that I would write a blog along with the videos, and that got old really quick. I was like, I don't want to do this. So, they ended up hiring a writer to write blog posts alongside the videos I would make. But then they ended up just after like a year of doing that, they're like, the YouTube channel's doing better and we don't really care. Yeah. So, but if you just go to Canotica.com, it just forwards to my website now. So
very cool. So now that you have the channel, now that you have all your subscribers back, what's the plan? Do you plan on continuing the same path, or what, do you have anything specific else planned?
I'm kind of picking up where I left off with Indie Mogul. I had a lot of ideas that I wanted to do that I got a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but I did get pushback from Indie Mogul. They wanted me to stay, basically just keep doing what they've been doing, which is great. Like I love the channel and I love what Ted created, but I had some other ideas. I feel like there's really a hole in our niche that can be filled by somebody that's doing a little bit more broader appeal topics. That I'm trying to basically find that balance of the YouTube genre like style that can hold retention and have interesting titles and clickable concepts, but not be cringy. So like that's really my number one goal, is to find that balance of like my personality is a little bit more cringe than the overall market of our niche, I think. And so I've thought for the last couple of years, like I need to start just an entertainment channel and basically just target teenagers, because I feel like I can perform for teenagers and they would actually like, I can work in that market and not be cringy. I mean, it will be cringy, but like, I don't care. Like I, that's just my personality. But I'm not ready to do that right now, 'cause I need to kind of like build something that's making money, and entertainment channels are don't make a lot of money. So I feel like I have been given a huge blessing with this opportunity. And so I'm going to keep doing reviews and different things like that, but I'm also experimenting with finding ways to kind of take it to the next level with everything. I feel like I've just been doing a lot of studying and of all the channels right now that are kind of big in our niche. And generally, like, everybody's views are down overall.
Really?
And I think, yeah. So like, if you look at like Potato Jet, you would think like he was really, and by the way, disclaimer for all this, I love all these creators. I respect them extremely. Mm-hmm. Like I respect all these people. I'm just being observant and constructive criticism here. And I don't think these decisions that these people are making mean that they're failing. They're probably all making good money still.
Right.
But that being said, Potato Jet's views are down compared to where they were a couple years ago. Peter McKinnon, especially, his views are way, way down. He has 6 million subscribers and he's kind of averaging 100,000 views a video. So he's not, and if you watch McKinnon's videos with the eyeball or like the understanding of what is working on YouTube, if you were to read the YouTube formula book or look at what Mr. Beast is doing and what the biggest creators on the planet are doing, McKinnon is not even, it doesn't even seem like he's trying to be a YouTuber. He's just doing the vlogs that he's always done and just kind of being himself and putting himself out there with his personality, which is great. People love it. About 100,000 people, 100 to 300,000 people love that. And that's enough people. If you're getting 300,000 views a video, like, that's a very respectable living that you can make off of that with sponsorships and with the, plus his name recognition is insane. So he makes so much money with the products that he sells. Mm-hmm. So again, this is all my disclaimer to say that I respect him. Sure. And stuff.
But that's interesting. I would like to know more about that. What's going on? And what's going on here with everyone's views dropping?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out, but I did have one video in particular at Indie Mogul that took off like a wildfire, and it was exactly it was completely strategized based on what I was studying works with YouTube, with retention and understanding how the structure of a YouTube video is to keep people to watch to the end. And it's basically having some sort of premise or having some sort of storyline in addition to the review that you're doing that engages the viewers enough to keep them to watch to the end. So the only video that I did for Indie Mogul that was a success in that way was the Mavic or the DJI Mini versus Inspire 2 drone video, where I took the Mini 2 and I put it head to head with the Inspire 2 with like the X7 gimbal. And then I did like side by side tests and then I color graded them to be as close as possible. And then the premise was Ted and I were going to watch the footage back and was going to try to see if I could fool Ted into thinking that the Mini was actually the Inspire, and like basically just trying to see if I could trick him into thinking that the cheap $300 drone looks as good as the expensive drone. So that type of content, I feel like in our niche, can get cringy really fast because people who take themselves really seriously start to like roll their eyes at the concept. Like, oh, I mean, this is so stupid. A $300 drone is not going to look like they're the ones, filmmakers are the ones who are having to explain to like normal people why a $4,000 camera is worth it compared to a $900 camera you buy at Costco. So when a YouTuber comes along and presents a premise like that, it causes eye rolls. But the reason that it worked was because, yes, the concept was kind of silly, but the content was valuable too. Like, you know, I was able to kind of share what I learned and like show some of the tricks I did to make the cheap one look better.
Yeah.
And then the fun of like the game show approach of Ted trying to figure out which one was which, like, made people interested enough to watch to the end to see if he got them all right.
So that's good. That's really.
Yeah, so basically I want to play around with that in our niche some more. And again, with an emphasis on not making it cringy, because I think I did another video that was maybe a little too cringy. That was the iJustine versus Armando video, where I took an iPhone versus Alexa and did some side-by-sides and, like, you know, did this whole game show thing. And I don't think the edit was very good either. It, a lot of that wasn't, that was out of my control too, the edit on it. My first director's cut of that, I feel like, would have performed better. But basically, there's like definitely a million people that would probably consistently watch a channel that was like doing filmmaking camera gear stuff that is working in the YouTube algorithm space, but then is also providing value and information. Parker Wahlberg or whatever his name is. He's doing that. He's definitely somebody who's been like consistently doing the, I mean, he literally is doing the pro versus amateur videos or whatever, which perform very well. And it's for that same reason. It holds people's attention to the end. And so I have some ideas that I haven't seen done before. Mm-hmm. I don't want to share them yet because I don't want to give away my secrets.
So there's,
I have some ideas. Uh-huh. Basically, my problem with a review is, like, if I talk about a camera, I kind of have to cover almost all of the specs that are important. But not every person cares about every spec. So I find in myself, I had to like really be aware of myself when I would watch reviews, especially like Gerald and Dunn. He breaks up his reviews really well with the chapter markers. I think that's a little deadly for the video because I just kind of look at the chapter markers and just click to where I'm actually interested. So I only end up watching, he's got a 10-minute video. I only end up watching 3 or 4 minutes of it. So I'm trying to figure out, like, I do need to provide all that information to get the full picture of the camera. I don't want to just cover 3 or 4 things. Maybe I could experiment with that.
Right.
It's like the 3 features that I'm interested in, but then that borders on the line of like cringy. It's like, you're not providing enough value here. You're only doing 3 things, you know? So I'm trying to infuse other elements into it without the cringe factor, along with providing all that value somehow. Yeah. So I've got some ideas.
So I'm not a YouTuber, and I'm not, it's funny, I've been saying that for years. I'm not a YouTuber. I don't do like reviews like that or anything like that. But I will provide some sort of consulting, if you will. So I recently, about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, I got into golf. Golf has basically taken over. Like, it's really, it got me hooked. So I started watching a lot of golf videos. The biggest golf channel that I've seen is called Rick Shields. This guy does, compared to his other golf channels that do, this guy's like the biggest. And one thing that I noticed that he always does, and I haven't seen this on any other channel, is basically he creates some sort of attraction for someone, for you to view till the end. So if he's comparing two golf clubs, he'll say things like, stick around to the end to see which one of these will win. You know, injecting lines like that is definitely something that's attractive. I mean, for me, I always catch it. I know what he's doing. I see that, you know? He always remembers to sort of, in the middle of his video, if you're liking this video, go ahead and hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, you know, things like that. He's very, very good at that. So I definitely analyze that from a video creator point of view. I see what he's doing. He does it very, very well. What he does well is build tension, kind of like what's going to happen, you know? Can this driver outdrive that driver? Is this ball going to be the next thing that changes the game of golf? Well, stick around and find out. You know, like things like that has been very effective, I think, especially for him. I mean, the guy is now over 2 million subscribers for a golf channel, you know? So it's
I just looked at it. That's the guy's legit.
Doing phenomenal stuff. And mind you, and I noticed from a video creator, he only recently started shooting with good cameras. And when I say recently, I mean the last 4, 5, 6 months. Everything he's been doing with iPhones. Like, he does his video, he would do his videos with nothing but iPhones. All his B-roll, everything, iPhones.
Well, I'm coming at all this with the kind of trial and error that I've had over the last four and a half years doing this, and then also just studying a lot. Like this last year was a study year for me. That's of good. Like just masterclass on just reading this book, The YouTube Formula. If you haven't read this or you're not familiar with it, this book that I'm holding up on camera, if you're watching The YouTube Formula by Daryl Eaves, highly recommend this. It's basically the Bible for YouTubers. Yeah. And it's kind of like the things he teaches in this are all about retention, click-through rate, like how to build tension, like you're saying, how to like build a good thumbnail. And just because we're in a professional niche here with the filmmaking community doesn't mean that these rules don't apply.
Yeah.
And I just keep going back to that Inspire versus Mini video, because that video, I just remember the analytics when I was working there. It was like we were getting, you know, 70-80% retention, and it blew up. It's it's close to 1 million views now. Yeah. And like that's the only video that we ever did like that. But like I'm learning that the cringy like YouTuber face thumbnails don't necessarily work super well in our niche, because it's cringy. Like we have so many, let's just be honest, like middle-aged men who watch this content, and like that's a huge turnoff to them. And so, but then also I'm also considering the fact that over the next 10 years we're going to be getting a bunch of kids coming out of high school and college that are growing up watching Mr. Beast and all this and that, so they're going to maybe not be as triggered by the YouTuber face, you know? So, but that's my key like thing that I've learned recently, is like to work well. Basically every creator that is very successful in our niche kind of has a little bit of a swag to their content, like Parker, Peter McKinnon, Maddie, like they're all Sam Colder, like they all are kind of aspirational filmmakers in a way, because people look to their work as like, oh man, what they're doing is so epic, so cool, so sexy, you know. Whereas like Potato Jet, Kai W, myself, Jared Polin, like they're all very funny, entertainment focused. And I mean, Potato Jet has clearly worked really well, but he's actually a very good filmmaker and DP, so he's got that going on. So like I think I'm decent with shooting, but I'd never care about the production very much. I'm always like, just give me the story, give me the entertainment. And I think that's where YouTube is. That's the sweet spot for YouTube, really. Cause like you said, your golf channel, Rick Shields, like any channel outside of the filmmaking tech channels kind of can get away with like crappy cameras. In fact, I think it kind of enhances the storytelling because it feels more authentic, more DIY kind of. So, but with our niche, I've found it does kind of have to have a certain level of quality to establish that you're like, know what you're doing. But I think the problem is all these channels, like right now, if you just search, let's just say for example, the GH6, the Panasonic GH6 just came out. If you just search Panasonic GH6 on YouTube, you're going to find all these channels of all these guys that look like amazing guys. They all have great value. But there's so many channels now that have about 2,000 subscribers that are getting, you know, on a GH6 video, maybe 1,200 to 7,000 views on those videos. And all those new channels that didn't exist 4 years ago are people that saw what Peter was doing, what Maddie was doing 4 years ago. And they're like, I can do that. And now they're doing it. Everybody has the exact same set with the wood and the RGB lights and the aperture 120D. And they're all shooting on the A7S III or, you know, maybe a C70 or Blackmagic or whatever. And like, there's nothing creative or interesting about that. I think it's valuable to input your opinion and to be yourself, and like, nobody can be you. So like, be yourself, and that's totally great. And I don't fault any of these guys, and I've been that guy as well. But like, I think that's the problem with the niche right now, is there's so many people doing it because we're all video professionals. Like every single one of those channels are freelance filmmakers who are just like, I'm going to do a YouTube channel on the side while I do my music videos and weddings and whatever. And that's a great way to kind of build a following. And like, if you're doing it specifically to kind of grow your career as a freelancer, then that's great. But for the YouTuber, like I want to be, I could care less about making movies or commercial projects. I don't want to work with another client for the rest of my life. Like I just want to make YouTube forever. And I love cameras. I could talk about cameras all day. I don't care what camera it is. I'm fascinated by it. And I love picking it up and figuring out how to use it. I don't really care about shooting like epic cinematic stuff. I just like the camera. Right. So like for 4 or 5 years, I felt like I was sort of being like told, it's not about the camera. It's not about the camera. Like you got to tell a good story or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that's true. But I, to me, the story is the camera. I like the camera. I'm kind of obsessed about the product. Yeah. And I don't know if that, I don't, and that's kind of the problem for me is like, I don't really care to go shoot like Armando Fiera. He would like take an A7S and go shoot a short film. And then he would like talk about his experience using the camera, shooting a short film. But like, I don't care to make a short film. I just want to like make an entertaining YouTube video about the A7S. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, so, I know exactly what you mean. I'm one of those that I love the camera as well. I'm a huge fan of cameras. I own four of them for no reason. But yeah. I can see where, you know, I'm one of those that say it's about the story. Just like you said earlier,
yes,
to get that engagement, you need a good story to go with this product that you're about to talk about. Because if you just turn on your camera, put a couple of lights on and say, start talking about the camera only, you're probably not going to get as much engagement as if you kind of stick a story in there. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like where they're where they're coming from with that, with regards to it's about the story. But yeah, like you said.
No. I'm just saying, 100%. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, like the story for me is the camera. That's I feel like people, basically what I'm saying is like I would build the story around the camera. And it's like, well, it's not about the camera. Like, go make something with the camera and then come back and tell us what you made. It's like, well, I did make something. I made this video about it.
That's true. Well, yeah, I think to Armando's point, like Armando, I've seen his videos. I don't see them all, but
Armando's awesome.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Good friend and super talented. I think, love him.
He enjoys making those short films. And that's kind of what it is. Like he enjoys doing, so he gets this product that, you know, I'm sure he loves and all that stuff, but he goes, let me go do something I love to do and tell you about it in that context. You know, if you like doing sports, go shoot sports with this camera and then talk to us about it. Let us know what it, I like what totally. Matt Johnson is doing. Matt Johnson gets his camera and gives it its review from a wedding filmmaker's point of view. So those are the things that kind of people want.
And he likes weddings. I've interviewed him on my show as well, and we're good friends. I was like, there was a point where in our interview where I asked him, I was like, so do you like shooting weddings? He's like, I love it. I was like, really? So I was like, it was an interesting thing. He actually really enjoys it. He has a great business doing it. And you're right. Like he comes at it from that perspective and that makes his content very specific. And he gets work from his channel too, because people, he's like, you'd be surprised, like brides and grooms will just like be searching on YouTube for like wedding filmmaker
that works
on YouTube. And then all my videos show up and he books clients from people who aren't even filmmakers just because he's so ingrained in
It helps out. He and I did an episode on my podcast talking about commercial clients compared to residential clients or, you know, individual clients. I guess that's a huge benefit for him and having his channel is because just about everybody that watches his show could be a potential client. It's not the case for me because my commercial clients are not going to be looking at my channel because I'm not catering to them. I'm catering, you know, I'm talking about stuff that people that want to be YouTubers want to talk about. So that's a very big plus for him. But either way, he's doing great work. And again, it's very niche based and he's doing fantastic work. He's also a funny dude.
100%. Super funny. Love that guy. Yeah. And again, I just want to reiterate that anything that may be taken as criticism is constructive and it's not by any means accusatory. I am good friends with Armando. Yeah. I'm good friends with like a lot of these people that I've mentioned. I know personally. I would love to, if any of them wanted to, if they're listening to this and they want to reach out and be like, hey, you know what? You're kind of right about this. Like, how can I change this or that or whatever? I love the YouTube so much. And I feel like it's kind of, I don't know many guys in our niche that genuinely love YouTube. So, and that's the kind of my problem is like, am I in the wrong niche? You know what I mean? Like, with this type of passion and energy, if I put it towards a different niche that we're talking, instead of 100,000 views as kind of your barrier of success, we're talking millions in a different niche. Like, that's been my kind of internal struggle is like, I through and through feel more passionate about being an entertainer than anything. But I just happen to love cameras and technology. So I've kind of just been thrown into that niche.
I'm pretty sure that there is a way you can combine all of that. So for example, I'm more of a sort of professional in the sense that I do commercial work, I do big events, and I have a whole team of people that I coordinate with. So I'm in the more of the professional sort of level. I'm not really in the YouTuber type of level. This is really more extracurricular activity for me, having the podcast and all that stuff. So I'm what you would call one of those viewers that really doesn't pay attention to the entertainment side of camera review. So I gravitate more toward Gerald Undone anytime a camera comes out because I want to know everything about this camera inside and out.
Me too.
You know? And so that's the guy to go to know everything about, not to be entertained. So I don't listen. I don't look at Potato Jet. I don't look at other channels that more make it into a show.
More personality.
Right. Because that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the information. Now, not every viewer is going to be like me, but I'm doing it to see how this can benefit my business. You know what I mean? So I want to see it from a professional point of view. That being said, I really enjoy Casey's videos, Camera Conspiracies. That guy is hilarious. Yes. So when I only want to be entertained, I'll go watch Casey because he is just funny with all his antics. It's just hilarious to watch.
Well, you know,
he's probably one of the most least qualified, and he even says it himself, to like review cameras. I don't go for him for the information. I go for him to him for the entertainment of talking about these cameras. 100%. So,
Camera Conspiracies. I love that channel. And I think the great thing that you pointed out is like, he kind of has this understanding that like, you know, going into it, that it's a meme, you know, the whole thing, the whole entire thing, every video is a joke. So that's the difference is like, in the past I've tried to experiment with jokes, but then I also do real videos. So it kind of splits the audience a little bit. So but this is all interesting data for me to listen to though, because I think that's like been my struggle is like, I feel like people in our niche really just take themselves very seriously and that's not bad. And they just want to kind of come to listen to the specs and look at the reviews, and they don't want to fuss around with anything that gets in the way of the information that they're coming there for. So, and you look at like MKBHD, for example, he's the biggest, you know, tech reviewer on the planet, I guess. Him and Linus Tech Tips and, you know, his stuff is extremely valuable. He always comes at it from like a certain angle. He's always got just great value that he's adding. And it's not like entertaining in that way that you would consider like a comedy show. But it is entertaining for tech enthusiasts.
But he doesn't do anything that is kind of like outside the bounds of like, I don't know. I don't see it. It's entertaining in that I love the shots that he has all the time. He always has great shots of the products. He's able to formulate.
Yeah.
He's able to formulate his point in a very efficient way that it's easily consumable. So it kind of works for him. And anybody that wants to know anything about the next iPhone that's coming out, that's the guy to go to and get his review on that. Just like any camera, Gerald is the guy to go to get really the main meat and potatoes of this new camera, you know? So, there,
and I think I feel like I relate more to kind of Linus Tech Tips. I don't know if you've ever watched.
I've heard of him,
but like he does very kind of high level tech stuff often, where he'll like do a whole breakdown of like his IT setup with servers and all this crazy stuff. Yeah. But yet he keeps it highly entertaining somehow. So, and then he's got multiple hosts and like a full, you know, massive crew. I think he's got like 30 or 40 employees now.
Wow.
Writers, shooters. It's really well shot. I think that's the underlying thread for a lot of the biggest creators in the tech and camera space, is like, it kind of needs to be shot well, because it kind of goes alongside the product of like, this proves that we know what we're talking about, that kind of thing. But then within that, you can be silly.
Yeah. I definitely agree. It's after a certain point, it's still very much about the story, but there's something that you have to have that quality there, because once I start watching a channel, if I'm looking for something that's not really, there's not much out there about it, I'll go in. Like the other day, I was looking for a tripod review on a certain tripod. And I go out and I notice there's not that many reviews out there on this particular tripod. The ones that are out there is like, oh, I would say like 50 views, you know, a shot on a flip phone maybe, you know, just awful, awful well, quality. But you know, it's the only thing that was out there. It's just, you could absolutely tell. And obviously if I have options, I had to watch it because I didn't have any other options. But if I had options, I'm always going to I gravitate to the one that has a nicer first frame, you know, that has a nicer opening. I don't know. It's just one of those that
you're bringing up. I keep cutting you off here, but I'm inspired by what you're saying, because again, you're kind of bringing up some interesting like research for me, because there is another route you could take that doesn't require a big epic, you know, crazy YouTube-y kind of idea, and that is the kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with a channel called Think Media. They talk about YouTube.
I love
stuff.
Think Media. And I've had Sean Kennel on the podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Sean is awesome. He's a believer.
Yeah.
Awesome guy. I've met him a couple times at like NAB stuff. And anyways, their approach is kind of the shotgun approach, where they're kind of reviewing every camera that would be interesting in their niche, talking about almost every topic within their niche, you know, posting 5 videos a week, basically. Like, and maybe they're only getting, you know, 10,000 views a video for a 2 million sub channel. But if they're doing 5 videos a week, you know, I don't think they're actually doing 5, but let's just say they do 3 a week. Collectively over time, that adds up to a lot of views. They have a massive library that is completely just locked into the YouTube like search algorithm. And so when I hear you say that, I could take another approach, which is I just review every freaking thing I could possibly get my hands on, with my mindset of like trying my best to keep it entertaining, but also informative, well shot, well made, and just have a shotgun approach of like every product. That way it's just like Dave May's like archive just has everything you could possibly imagine. But that's not playing the YouTube game in the way that it's being played these days, which is high level concept, good thumbnail, good, you know, overall story that holds your attention to the end. So I don't know, maybe that's like a website where it's like a Patreon thing. Like you subscribe to a Patreon and I review, you know, 20, 30 products a month on that, you know, which would be exhausting.
Well, they would have to be like low scale in terms of like quality. You just set it, unless you have a set that you could just go and have there always only for that channel.
Yeah.
One of my favorite.
Maybe that could be a separate channel.
No, maybe. Definitely. One of my favorite channels, especially when I was starting off, was Film Riot. Film Riot. I started on Film Riot.
Yeah.
And
Ryan,
you know what's
Connelly,
funny?
Baby.
I had Ryan on the show as well. What's funny is that I don't do VFX. I don't do these Hollywood movies. I don't do narratives. I really don't. I just really, aside from the fact that, you know, they were helping the episodes that they had, where it was how to light for an interview, you know, the camera reviews, lighting techniques, audio techniques, things like that, equipment stuff. things that really mostly pertain to me. I love to watch those the most, more in depth, put it that way. But then what kept me on the other ones was their antics, their skits that they do all the time. It's hilarious. Totally. And how they made their ad reads so funny. I actually wish they would bring those back. But actually, I think they're coming back with that a little bit because their sponsor ads started becoming funny again. I love the when Josh would yell from behind the camera and some funny stuff there, and he, in the middle of an ad read, and he would interrupt Ryan. Their little back and forth is just really, really funny.
Ryan's amazing, and yeah. His channel is crazy, and he's been a good friend over the years. And he was partly like when I got the offer to work for Indie Mogul, I tapped into him. I called him up. I was like, should I do this? And he kind of told me that I should, even if it's only for a couple of years. And he's kind of been like, because he's really the only person that I can think of that in our niche has been around kind of since the beginning and has had really good success. He's always been like somebody I really look up to and respect. And you're right. Like he kind of balances the YouTube vibe with the filmmaking niche. I'm looking at his channel now and like his thumbnails look very cinematic, but they're also very clickbaity also, but they're so that he's doing the sort of like the YouTube thing, but it's not cringy because it looks more cinematic.
Their stuff is phenomenal. And I know that they've been really putting a lot of effort into making all these downloadable packs, these audio packs, these sound packs, these graphics that you can download on their store. They've been doing just a great job for a very long time.
Totally.
And they've been very consistent with all that.
Yeah. And they, So yeah, I mean Ryan doesn't just do Indie Mogul, Film Riot. He owns a couple other channels and he has a gaming.
Yeah, they have the Variant
channel
one,
and the comic book stuff. So I think those are a little more. I think he might have more YouTube success with those technically in terms of views.
He's doing what he loves though. He loves the
Film Riot
one. So I want to go back to a little bit and discuss a little bit of the. You mentioned that the views are down all across the board with all these channels. And I'm wondering if, because I have noticed a shift, let's say, for example, Peter McKinnon, I have noticed a shift in his content in the past year or two, where it's a lot less educational stuff and a lot more of what he loves, you know? Could
the personality
the kind
stuff.
Of stuff, vlogging stuff, and same thing with Maddie as well. So, I was trying to find a review on a camera. I forgot which one it was. Maybe A7S III when it came out or whatever. And it was a 10-minute video, but the first 6-7 minutes of it was just vlogging. And I'm like, this is why
I hate to say it, but. I relate to that. I was looking at his review of the R5C, and he didn't actually start talking about the camera until about 5 minutes and 38 seconds in. It's interesting. I mean, what was your question?
Yeah, no. And I'm trying to see if could this play a role, and I almost know the answer into like the viewership, you know? Because I even read in the comments where it's like, man. When are we either getting to talking about the camera, or this was like a 10-minute video, only 2 minutes of this 10 minutes was about the camera. And then like Peter McKinnon is like, I didn't see anything in the comments. I mean, don't get me wrong. The content that even Peter's talking about, these coffee makers that are very unique. You've never heard or seen of these things. Very cool. It actually, when he posted it on social media, because I don't watch it on YouTube, but when he posts it on social media, I actually kind of, I'm interested in knowing about this coffee maker. It's pretty cool stuff, but it doesn't bring me value. It brings me now more entertainment than anything. If you're into that kind of stuff, but I don't know. I definitely noticed the shift in content is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I'm no like crazy expert here. So, you know, that's my disclaimer, but based on my experience, being, you know, hosting Indie Mogul and having some success there and with Kinotika, and then also just doing a lot of research on this exact topic, 'cause I'm trying to figure it out too. because I'm in this niche. So I'm literally trying to figure out what's going on. I think a lot of those guys are kind of doing what Casey Neistat did 4 years ago, and that doesn't work anymore. Like, that's not how YouTube functions anymore. And the reason it works so well with Casey Neistat is because at the time YouTube was encouraging creators to post more frequently rather than having banger videos once a month. Mm. So it would actually be better for Peter to spend, again, this is just from a YouTube viewership perspective. If we're talking like, if Peter McKinnon wants to get 10 million views on a video, he could, because he has all the connections. Imagine if Peter McKinnon tapped into the potential of what he has, the access that he has with Casey Neistat, with Mr. Beast, with MKBHD, creating something in the YouTuber space with his giftings as a filmmaker and being in the filmmaking niche. He's able to do that crossover if he wanted to, and potentially do a video that would blow up and be astronomical in terms of views for our niche, but he's not doing it. And I think it's because maybe if he listens to this, he'd be like, oh yeah, I could do that. Maybe he just hasn't thought about it. But also, I think they're just focused on building their community, and what they're doing with these vlogs, I think, is beneficial to create kind of super fans, where Maddie and Peter and Potato Jet are creating these vlogs, and the people who do, the views might be lower than if they just did one banger video a month that got millions of views. But what they've done is they've kind of created a community of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people who are actually invested in their lives and like really kind of into the reality TV aspect of what they're doing. And those are the super fans that will buy the shirts and the backpacks and the LUTs and the things that they sell. And probably long term is a good strategy to have, because overall, you know, the next decade of their life, if they're able to kind of sustain a very solid fan base, they can make a living, you know, for the rest of their career, because these people are super fans. Just like, you know, if you listen to Van Halen, anytime Van Halen was in your town, you're going to go see him, you know? So anyways, I think that's ultimately what they're doing, is they're creating those super fans. But from a YouTube perspective, if you're trying to play the YouTube game, what they're doing worked 4 or 5 years ago when Casey was blowing up, when Logan Paul, Jake Paul were doing the daily vlogs. Basically, that's when Peter McKinnon blew up, was during that era. So I think Peter's sort of like, he was like infusing tutorials and education with a vlog, and that's how he got people hooked on his content, because he's a great on-camera personality. It's super engaging. Like, if you watch him as an entertainer and a person, it's easy to get kind of addicted to the McKinnon like personality, because you're just like really kind of hooked on it. And so now I feel like he's kind of gone the other way a little bit, where it's all personality with very, you know, not a lot of focus on search traffic and like, I'm going to talk about this thing that can maybe actually help somebody. He does, again, I'm not saying he doesn't review stuff and do tutorials, because he does still do tutorials and reviews, but it does seem like generally he's basically just doing vlog content, which means that he's building a solid fan base, but he's not necessarily playing the game of like trying to get a million views a video. So it's just two different strategies. The Mr. Beast strategy is a very young man strategy, single, non-married. Like, his goal is, he's only 23 years old, you know, Jimmy, or 24, I think. And so he's not married, doesn't have kids. Like, he's really young, and he's been doing this for a decade now. And he's just driven to get the most views possible. He's spending every dollar he makes on the videos. And that will probably work out for him well as he ages and matures, because he'll have gathered hundreds of millions of people that are his fans that will, you know, he'll be able to do TV shows. He'll be able to do more YouTube as it, you know, matures over the next decade, 20 years from now. But what McKinnon and Maddie, in my opinion, are doing is they're creating a longevity approach, which is like, they're not super focused on super clickbaity things. They're not super focused on what everybody else is doing in terms of just reviewing and doing tutorials and things. In fact, you could argue that you could get all that information from other people that have 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers, because that's kind of a quick and easy way to blow up, is to talk about something that's trending or to talk about a technique that people need to learn. I would argue that if they did that, they would continue to grow a little bit more. And I would also argue that they have a great opportunity that I don't think they're taking advantage of with the connections they have. That being said, I think they're, it seems like they're pretty happy with how things are going.
Yeah.
And I know McKinnon is making millions of dollars. So
I
think he's totally fine. And he's a husband and father too. He's got kids and like, so he's treating it like a job.
Yeah. And I've told people, that it's not easy to build content. So I had a client that wanted to start their channel, start their podcast, just like I'm doing mine, and do all this. I know the client very on a personal level as well. And I told them, look, I could tell you that even if I was to do all the work for you, I do the shooting, I'll do the editing, I'll do the uploading, I'll do the description, everything for you. What I cannot do for you is something that you're going to have to kind of commit to doing consistently. And that's going to be difficult. Even that alone is going to be difficult for you. And that is finding your topics, finding your guests, all this stuff. That takes work as well. And I'm telling you this from experience, because I've been doing my podcast for 3 years. It is time consuming to try, not only physically, but mentally. These are things that you have to think about on a week-to-week basis. When I started my podcast, I started doing 3 episodes a week. You know, three episodes a week. And I was doing, I don't know how long that lasted for. It lasted for a good amount of time, put it that way. But it made it much easier when I had a static co-host, you know, much easier. Because I don't have to go look for a host. Hey, let's get on. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Right? Not a problem. Great.
Yeah.
Now, what else? Then we went down to 2 episodes. Now I'm down to 1. Now I'm down to whenever I can type of deal. But again, it's not, my podcast wasn't really mostly about bringing me money or anything like that. It was really more to put out information, to connect. It has brought me good indirect work, but that was never the goal. But yeah, so I know firsthand. And on top of that, I was the DP for the I Am Athlete podcast with Brandon Marshall, Fred Taylor, Chad Ochocinco, and Channing Crowder. Those guys kind of broke up already. And I'm working with the Pivot podcast now, which is only Fred Taylor, Channing Crowder. But when they were I Am Athlete podcast, they once had Jake Paul as the guest, and they and they asked Jake, this is when Jake was like really getting into boxing and whatnot. He already had like what, 2 wins already, but with like no name people essentially. And they asked him the question, what's harder, boxing or YouTubing? He said, YouTubing, hands down, way harder. And I was probably the only one, because I know all the guys and whatnot, and they're all pushing back. I'm like, no way, man. Football's way hard. And listen, I played football myself. I played in college. I kind of know what they kind of entails to be a football player. But YouTubing is harder, bro. YouTubing, it's harder mentally. Mentally, it takes a toll. Yeah. That's why there's YouTube burnout. You've never heard of football burnout. That doesn't happen. That's not a thing. We have 2 days. Like we go through all that stuff. Again, I've done them both. YouTubing, in the capacity, put it this way, in the capacity that Jake Paul was doing it. We're talking daily vlogs, daily videos, all this stuff. To have to think about that kind of content, what's engaging, what, you know, all these lines, what Rick Shield does to make sure you put that line in there. To stay tuned to the end, all this stuff that goes into making a YouTube video engaging, not just putting any video up, make it engaging, make it attractive, make more people want to watch. there's no end to that. It's a bottomless pit. Nothing is going to fill that, you know? So it's a nonstop thing. So YouTubing is very real burnout that goes with that. That's why for you, it was very good that you took a whole year off to take a break, to kind of reanalyze, recalibrate yourself. And I would even advise every YouTuber to purposely plan a break, plan a month where you're just off of YouTube for 30 days. Take 30 days, go on a trip, recalibrate yourself, come, you know, and then get back to it. But I think that that's essential. Yes, in 30 days, you might get a few people unsubscribe or whatnot, but you're refreshed. You can come back with clear mind, you know, think of new topics. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean don't think of anything. If something pops up in the top of your head, something like, man, this would be a great video, write it down. I'm sure every YouTuber does that. I do that. But
100%.
Write it down, put it away. Enjoy your vacation. Enjoy your days off. Enjoy your family. Enjoy whatever it is, travel. But you have to step away. You need that break, because if not, it's just going to be detrimental. You're just continuing to try and fill a bottomless pit that's never going to be filled. You know, it's just, you need that refresh. Yes. So that's what I mean. I would highly recommend a lot of YouTubers to do that, because that's just, it's going to happen. It's not when, it's not if, it's when. So
absolutely. I agree with everything you said. Yeah. I was never an athlete. I was in marching band. So I was one of the nerds that but that was hard too.
Physical toughness and mental toughness they're very two different monsters. I would take physical toughness over any mental toughness anytime, just because, you know, I was kind of bred that way. But mental toughness and mental capacity to kind of think of all these things and not drive yourself nuts, it's tough. It's a real thing. So,
you know, that reminds me of a pirate. He had a steering wheel stuck in his crotch. He said, "Arg, it's driving me nuts."
I think that's a good ending to the episode.
Have you heard that joke?
I don't think so. Oh, man. That's a good ending to the show. Dude, so where can everybody find all of your stuff, the new channel and all that?
Sorry for the sound. It sounds like my VHS player just started rewinding itself.
I don't hear it.
Dave Maze. DaveMaze. I was going to do this Dave Maze 222 thing because it was like a number that was special to me and my wife. But then I acquired that URL for my personal channel, and then I got Kinotika, and now I deleted it from my personal one, but for some reason, like in their system, it hasn't like gone back on the market. So it's actually Dave Maze 1. Like if you go to youtube.com/Dave Maze, and I just added the number 1. So because some joker has the URL, you know, youtube.com/Dave Maze, I need to figure out how I can get a hold of that. But anyways, just search Dave Maze and it'll pop up. So
awesome. I'm going to be putting links to that on the show notes for this episode. But dude, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story. That was awesome.
Thank you, Ariel. It was a pleasure. It was super fun. Go check out the Golden Hour podcast as well. I host that each week with different guests. And thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
So there you have it. I hope you liked that conversation. I hope that it sparked some thinking on your part regarding YouTube channels and how to start one, how to build one, how to retain one. It's definitely no walk in the park. It's very, very hard work. But anyways, I hope you guys were able to walk away with some good knowledge on this episode. And I definitely look forward to Dave Maze coming on the show again. I'll be putting links to all of his channels and links and content on the show notes for this episode, so you know where to find those. Until next time, my name is Ariel Martinez, and thanks for joining us on the Miami Video Podcast.